It's Ann Liguori and Talking Golf on The Fan.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, April 5th. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers Insurance for auto, home, and business. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Well, glad to be with you this morning, the start of our 13-week run of sharing golf talk with you, interviews with the movers and shakers in the game, hearing from many of you, I hope, here at 877-337-6666. And many of you may remember me from my Hey Liguori, What's the Story days. Come on, we're not that old. That show started the first weekend that WFAN was on the air, July 4th, 1987, to be exact. That's Saturday when my show started. But I've been covering, that show went on for years, and I've been covering golf and the U.S. Open tennis for the station all these years. And this week would have actually been the start of covering my 22nd straight Masters. I'd like to wish you the very best during this very challenging, unprecedented time. And I really want to personally thank every one of you on the front lines who risk their own health to help others and who are saving lives. You are the true heroes in life. And I can't thank you enough. We will get through this tough time together for sure. We need to remain positive, strong, and prayers can only help. And I always thought that, you know, radio during these challenging times helps bring people together. I remember hosting Hey Liguori, What's the Story during the aftermath of 9/11. And we had everybody on, from firefighters, paramedics, psychologists, medical personnel, police officers, volunteers. And, you know, the station really devoted most of its programming for several weeks to talking about 9/11. And callers told me that they found it very therapeutic. People called in to share their concerns, their fears, their opinions, and it really helped that people could relate to how others were feeling. So know that in this very challenging time, we here at WFAN are here for you to help keep you company, to help you feel a little better, and to help get you through the day. We can all get through this. We have to stay hopeful, stay strong, stay positive. Well, this is the second season of Talking Golf, and I'm happy to say that the show I hosted last year from the Masters preceding the final round, which actually would be a year from next Sunday, won the International Network of Golf Media Competition for Best Radio Show. So know that we're working hard to bring you enlightening conversation about golf and the people who make the sport so very special in so many ways. And as I say, this is the Sunday and next Sunday where I normally would broadcast from one of my favorite places on the planet, Augusta National. There's nothing quite like Augusta National. It's just so beautiful. The serenity of the course, the grounds, the azaleas, the magnolia trees. And, you know, usually the Masters signifies to golf lovers the beginning of spring and golf season in New York and in all of the Northeast. And, I really would like to hear from you this morning. You know, what's on your mind? Are you missing the start of golf season? Are you playing on a course nearby that's open? Do you think it's safe to play golf? What is your favorite Masters moment? Jump on the line. We only have an hour. 877-337-6666 so that we can have a chat. I would love to hear from you. So the Women's Amateur Championship, the final round was to have taken place yesterday at Augusta National. Well, instead, CBS Sports replayed last year's inaugural championship, in which Jennifer Kupcho won with a 5 under 67, just incredible, beating her buddy Maria Fassi by 4 shots. And I was right there on the first tee early Saturday morning last year watching Nancy Lopez, Annika Sörenstam, Sari Pack, Lorena Ochoa, hit their ceremonial tee shots. It was indeed a historic day. And what a great round for Jennifer Kupcho of Wake Forest. She was actually 2 shots behind Maria Fassi as she made the turn. And, you know, it was later discovered while she was playing that she was actually battling a migraine headache. throughout a lot of that championship round, and yet she eagled the par 5 13th and went on from there to win. And, you know, what was so cool about that day was seeing their extraordinary play, these young women, and then seeing all the parents with their daughters on the course and in the merchandise tent, just buying, you know, women's amateur championship shirts and bags. And they were just completely ecstatic to be there and to have watched history. And they were just so inspired by watching these women play golf at Augusta National. So it truly was an incredible memory. And today would have been the junior competition, the drive, chip, and putt national finals. But obviously that has been postponed. And in the case of the drive, chip, and putt national finals, Augusta National announced that they are moving it to next year so that the same kids who qualified to play this year will have the opportunity to compete next year on the Sunday leading into Masters Week. They have canceled actually the qualifying competitions for this year, so they're not going to hold a new competition. And instead, they're giving the kids who reach the final round this year the opportunity to do it next year in the same age group that they qualified this year. So I think that's a great move, letting these kids come back next year and compete as opposed to just canceling it outright. So, I mean, can you imagine how excited they must have been when they heard that? So I was happy to see that. Of course, there are so many questions about when the Masters, the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open will be rescheduled, if they will be rescheduled. What the PGA Tour is doing, what the LPGA Tour is doing in terms of rescheduling. And this morning, we will connect with CBS Sports golf commentator Frank Nabilo and LPGA Commissioner Mike Wan. We'll get their perspectives on what they think the schedules could look like, how the coronavirus is affecting the golf industry. We'll also take a look at last year's Masters, Tiger's magical win. So much to talk about. And I can squeeze in a couple calls before the 20-877-337-6666 if you want to jump on the line. Here's my take on the Masters being rescheduled. First, there was talk about the Masters being rescheduled in October. And then I heard there's talk about the Masters perhaps being played the week of November 9. Journalist Eamon Lynch from Golf Week, he came out with an article a few days ago saying that golf's governing bodies are close to unveiling a new schedule and that the Masters is tentatively penciled in for the week of November 9. Now, I personally think that with all the uncertainty in the air, that the Masters may just wait until next year. It's just my opinion. I just can't see them holding the Masters in November and then again 5 months later in April 2021. I'd love to get your thoughts on that. I mean, the Masters has always been its own entity, not swayed by public opinion or others. I'm sure they'd like to get it in, but they certainly won't hurt financially if they decide not to reschedule the Masters this year and just wait till next year. So then you have the U.S. Open scheduled at Wingfoot in Westchester, June 18 to 21. It has not officially been postponed yet, but we know it will be postponed. There's been some talk that if it gets rescheduled later in the year, that they could have a club on the West Coast, perhaps Torrey Pines, perhaps Pebble Beach host it if the U.S. Open gets rescheduled. But, you know, all that is speculation. Torrey Pines is actually supposed to host the U.S. Open next June. But hey, maybe they could switch with Torrey Pines this year and hold the U.S. Open at Wingfoot next year. So there's a lot, there's a lot of speculation. We have a couple of callers on the line already at 877-337-6666. Robbie from Lake Success, welcome to Talking Golf.
Hey, Ann, good to speak to you. And everybody stay safe out there. A couple points on my thoughts. Number one, my favorite was 96, Tiger's first win. The runaway, and obviously last year was
97.
Amazing. When you look at the comparison from, you know, his first and now what he did last year. But, you know, my club, you asked a couple questions. My club out here on Lake Success, we get temporary greens. We're closed. I can't use the facilities. We're not allowed. I mean, the streets are dead here. I'm able to get out and do my workouts. I'm a distance runner. So I was trained. You know, you talk about What the Masters always meant to me as a golfer, it signifies spring. But to me, baseball and running the Boston Marathon every year was the beginning of spring. So I was training for Boston. We canceled now in September. I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. I don't think the Masters. I don't even negative because I'm going to try to end on a positive way. I don't think the Masters is going to happen. I think we got a long way to go. When baseball stadiums are filled with 30,000 people, that means we're going to be allowed to be participating out in the world again. But I'll give you a positive thing. Myself,
okay.
I got the virus. I'm a healthcare professional. I got the virus, and one of the earlier people that had the virus that I wasn't officially tested because I got it in the beginning of February. I had all the symptoms, the flu-like, the sore throat. There's no doubt in my mind. I spoke to many of my friends as well as ER doctors. We believe that. I mean, I know I had it. I have to wait till the immuno tests come out that I can check my immuno level, see if I actually had it, which I do believe I had. In the end, people like me, because thousands and thousands of people had this virus in January and February, there's no doubt. I spoke to people across the country.
Yeah.
Similar symptoms.
I have a girlfriend who thinks she had it in January, and then she got it again.
Yeah.
She got it again. She has it now.
See, that's scary, because what you just said, from what I've been told, like with most viruses, Dr. Fauci's saying that this particular or any type of a virus is contracted, usually, you get antibodies, and the chances of reoccurring on the same strain is unusual, and that's trying to find. When this test comes out, get checked, is my goal. Give the thousand special, because you know.
Robbie, I'm losing you. I just lost you, Robbie, but be well. I hope you have a very speedy recovery, and I think you said you're a healthcare professional, so I hope you're okay. My goodness. But yeah, he brought up a couple points. First of all, let's talk about the golf courses. He said his golf course is closed in Lake Success. I asked a couple of my buddies out there what's going on with golf courses. Kelly Brook at Bethpage says the yellow, green, blue, and red courses at Bethpage are open. The black course will open April 15th. So that's awesome for Bethpage. I'm sure there's all kinds of social distancing and protocol that's existing as far as that goes. Don Gorski, my buddy up in Westchester, said he played 18 at Apawamis yesterday. They only allow twosomes out there, and they're maintaining social distancing, which is good. I got a text from my buddy Rob at West Hampton, and he said that, let's stand by here, I'm looking for his text. He said they're walking and carrying only, but hitting to auxiliary greens. Pull carts are allowed, and he said Sabonic opened 9 holes for members with raised cups on greens. And I know down in Florida, many of the golf courses are open. You can only ride 1 person per cart. The cups have these styrofoam things in them, and so the ball doesn't drop into the hole, so you don't have to touch the pin. They haven't had rakes on the golf courses in Florida for a long time, so you don't have to touch the rakes. So everybody around the country is doing what they can to, just to try to keep these golf courses open. Do you think it's a good thing? I know in Palm Springs, my friend at Palm Springs said they just closed her course. And state and local authorities are apparently trying to shut down courses there. Some have closed, some are still open, some were closed and have reopened with more strict guidelines. So everybody's trying to figure this out. Obviously, from a business standpoint, golf courses want to stay open, but they have to be very careful that it's healthy. All right, we are going to take a quick break, come back, and Frank Nabilo, CBS Sports Golf Analyst, will join us. We'll talk about the Masters. We'll talk about just rescheduling, what the speculation is about rescheduling the Masters, the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, all this and more, and we'll squeeze in some more of your phone calls here, so don't go away.
It's Sunday morning, and you're talking golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. I'm on my second cup of coffee. I don't know how many coffees Pete Hoffman has had behind the glass, but I can't see Pete, but I can just imagine he's wearing a mask, he's wearing gloves, he's taking every precaution, which I think is a good idea. Thanks, Pete. You're doing a great job. And at this point, I'd like to say good morning to one of my favorite people in golf, Frank Nabilo, CBS Sports golf analyst, former tour player. Frank, how you doing?
Not too bad, Ann. I'm not like you. I'm only in my first cup of coffee, but hunkered down here in Orlando, Florida, so things have been pretty good. I know it's going to get a little worse, like everybody else, in a couple of weeks, but trying to adapt to this new world.
Are they playing golf in your neck of the woods?
Do you want the truth?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
I'm not, to be honest. I've seen some of the pictures, but people are, my wife and I, we go for a walk about 5 o'clock every night. We see a lot more people doing that than ever before, but people are on the golf course. Sometimes it's a family, and I guess they find it hard because when you live on the side of a golf course, if you're living in the same house, you're closer than that 6 feet area if they're all healthy. They presume if they go out together and stay in that group that they'll be okay. So I hope they're right.
Yeah, I mean, there are courses open all over the country, and that's the big debate. Should they continue to stay open if they practice social distancing, that kind of thing? So I've been hearing from different people all over the country, mostly in the New York area, and, some courses are still open and some aren't. But before getting into this whole rescheduling talk, if things were normal, because this morning I would be doing the show, if things were normal, from one of my favorite places on the planet, Augusta National. And if things were normal, what would your day today be like, Frank? I mean, Sunday before Masters Week.
Yeah, oddly enough, that's exactly what I was thinking about yesterday, because last year, I was still working for the Golf Channel as well as CBS. And it was the final round of ANWA, which is the brand new initiative. First time ever that ladies got to compete, albeit amateur players, at Augusta National. And it was phenomenal. It came down to Jennifer Kupcho and Maria Fassi and honorable mention really to Hayley Moore. And it was great to be involved in something like that. And then there was the drive, chip and putt, which would have been today. So you get to see kids, the future of the game, and then you, like everybody, you sort of start to get to that Monday of Masters Week and the questions, and then Tuesday and Wednesday, and then basically the opening bell really Thursday, and the place always looks pristine, whether it's raining, whether the sun's out, and if it came anywhere close to last year, it'd be phenomenal. But it would also be the first tournament back together for all the CBS guys. So we had a conference call the other day. We've been having one every week. And it was something everybody was looking forward to when we left the West Coast, but it's not going to happen. Yeah, but it would be where a lot of people still think around the world that this is when golf really starts. I know we have a different calendar now, but it's our Wimbledon. It's special.
Yeah, it definitely is. I know you recently did leave the Golf Channel for CBS Sports, and obviously there hasn't been any golf to cover, but you say you talk to people at CBS pretty regularly. What can viewers expect from the current team when life gets back to normal?
Well, people have talked. It's a new team. Everybody's excited about doing it. The conference call is to keep everybody together. And also, for example, CBS paid all its technicians that would have worked. The final four would have finished on today. But there's people there that, their job's involved. I know, you and I, we put our voices to the product, but there's so many people. You just reference Pete behind the scenes. Golf has 100 of those, 1,000 basically, especially when you look at something like the Masters, and that's their livelihood. So, we're really gypsies. A lot of people just, go to a different place, different weeks, but they become friends. So they're hurting. And, we talk about that. We talk about what CBS is doing that, but really, because when you're an announcing team, it's to steal the words of Vin Scully, it's a relay sport. So you're passing the baton from one announcer to another. It's very, very different. So you get close, and you miss them. You want to work together, and also you miss golf. I've been exposed to golf really my whole life, in one facet or another. So for 40 straight years, I've been involved with golf, whether I was playing it or broadcasting at the highest level. So for me, it's complete aberration at the moment, what's happening.
Yeah, it's really, really tough. But we'll get through it, Frank. We will get through it.
Yeah.
A year ago, Matt, Tiger's just incredible win. One of the great sports stories of all time. Talk a little bit about that, what you recall from his win last year and just how special it was.
Well, if you indulge me just a minute, 1975 was my favorite Masters. That was the Masters, and it'll be rerun actually next week, was the first Masters where, as a kid in New Zealand, I got to see, you know, Nicklaus, Weisskopf and Miller, and I'm like, wow, this is the game I want to play. And then really watching them all and then starting to compete, 1986 became the standard, you know, obviously the comeback for Nicklaus. So then as a player, then broadcaster, I never thought I would see anything that would replicate that. And I know a lot of comparisons have been made, but I was doing both duties, Golf Channel and CBS last week. And I don't know, on Monday, I remember talking about that. I said, you never know, we could get our version of 1986. And I don't want to say one's better than the other because it depends on when you were born. But for this current generation that really had been exposed to Tiger Woods golf, that's what it was. But you know, the players, people forget there was three people tied for second. You know, Xander Schauffele, Dustin Johnson, and of course Koepka, who, you know, if he makes the birdie putt on 18, things might have got a little different. You know, Molinari had the lead, you know, the Open champion, you know, from the previous year. You know, there were people playing really good golf, but he was, where I say he, Tiger Woods was so clinical when everything was on the line with 8 holes to go. You know, I saw the shot, you know, I had 11 and 12. The shot he hit into 11, I still think, was what started it. He was in trouble, hit a brave shot through the trees up and over the water. And then at the smart shot on 12, the par 5, you know, everything was so well done. And you would think for someone that hadn't won a major championship, as good as he was for 11 years, that it would have been much harder than that. It was amazing. And then the fact that Nick Faldo and Jim Nance, they just laid out. They didn't say a word there for a couple of minutes. They just let the pictures tell the story. And I think that was the fitting way to end it. It was marvelous.
Very, very special. I think I read CBS is going to replay that final round next Sunday.
Yeah, what will happen on, I think it starts next Saturday, is there'll be, 1975 will be on for an hour, then there's the 2004, which is Mickelson versus Ernie Els, and then they will be replaying, obviously, you know, 2019. Yeah, so that's nice. I mean, for, you know, for Mickelson, that was, remember, that was his first, and, you know, that was a gut punch to Ernie Els. And of course, you know, 75. I had nothing to do with it, but I'm glad that's been on, that's on again. And of course, last year. And the other thing about last year, it was the first time ever they went to threesomes early in the morning because of the weather forecast.
That's right. We started early.
Yeah. So the storm hasn't finished since, really. But yeah, that was, and I actually thought that would have been a little bit of a disadvantage. People took it the wrong way, but you know, Tiger Woods normally plays best the bigger the stakes. So I thought playing earlier, if anything, took a little bit of his advantage away. It was going to allow people not to get as nervous, basically go home, sleep, get up, and get straight back into their golf. And that's what I think. When you put it in perspective, it's not like the chips, people go off, this had to happen for him, that had to happen for him. Well, they forget, really. You know, I think the advantage of he playing in the last group, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, on Sunday, that was taken away. It was going to be like a 9 o'clock start. Get out there and play.
Yeah, and I think he liked that other than, you know, rather than just wait forever. Because he doesn't sleep much, right? He says he gets up like 4 in the morning. And so, you know, to get up so early in the morning and then have to wait until an afternoon tee time. I think the early tee time really helped him. And as you said, Molinari, he had a 2-shot lead heading into the final round. And then on the 12th, you know, Tiger just played it safe. He just knew exactly what to do. He aimed above the bunker. His tee shot found the green. He 2-putt for par. And then, you know, going into the 15th, there was a 5-way tie for the lead on 15.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he birdies that to take the outright lead. And then that shot on the par 3 16th, he almost aced it. That was unbelievable.
Yeah, there's the ridge on 16, which makes that possible. But I wouldn't say safe on 12. He played it smart. And that's the Nicklaus philosophy. You know, Jack Nicklaus always said you aim at the central bunker in the front. And you had, you know, golf is so aggressive now. So you had guys, you know, like you didn't need to play the shot. I remember Jordan Spieth when he made 7, when it looked like he was going to win his second Masters. And, you know, there's we often think if you don't aim at the flag, it's a safe shot. But like Decade System, which is invented by a guy by the name of Scott Fawcett, you know, the aggressive way to play golf is to shoot the lowest score. So that's part of it. It's aiming at the correct targets, aiming where you should do. And he had the presence of mind not to take the bait. So that was a very smart shot.
Right, you're absolutely right. And to think it had been 11 years before he was able to win, you know, another major title. And people just kind of, at that point, had counted him out. I mean, years and years of injury and scandal. And he basically hit bottom professionally and personally and then just comes back. I mean, it's just an incredible story. So we could talk about that all day. I do want to get into some rescheduling talk, Frank Nobilo. And, you know, what do you think? I mean, there is talk about the Masters being rescheduled for November. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I've heard it all. It's weird how, you know, the Players' Championship, for example, started on a Thursday, was cancelled on a Friday. And I had friends ringing me on Saturday saying, when do you think they're going to start up again? And, you know, this is the first time something has happened like this on a worldwide scale since 1918, Spanish flu. You know, I'm not trying to go CNN on everybody here, but, you know, like this is, in my lifetime, unprecedented. So we're so used to sport, even when there's been a bomb scare or whatever, we still go out, we still watch, or we participate. But this is different. And I think, you know, to answer your question, there's going to have to be a conversation. Well, someone's going to have to start it very, very soon. And that is, how do you like your sport? How do you like your professional sport? And with that, I mean, do you like fans, patrons? Do they have to be there? Personally, I think the answer to that is yes. And if that's the case, we don't come back for a long time. We don't come back for longer than people would realize. We'd be lucky to come back by then. If people will tolerate going, you know, watching basketball, you know, NBA, NFL on TV with no one in the stands, and then are you being safe to all the support staff and all that do that are involved in working and making sure that everything else, the facilities are fine there for the players, and that, are you okay with that? So we have to start those conversations. Would we rather sport with no one watching or no sport at all? But you can't just, otherwise, if you just start it up and think business as usual, we're not going to start for a while, because you can't have, you know, 100,000 people. You imagine Phoenix, for example. Phoenix gets 600,000 people for the week. It's impossible. It'd be impossible to have anything like that. So do you just have it with no fans? And no one's talked about that yet. They've talked about, oh, well, we'll just have events with fans. But do you do that for a couple of months? And I think people have to, when they're desperate to have professional sport again, I think the public are going to have to green light that. Because if you know, Joe Blow, who's lost his job at home, and so it's all right for the sports people to come out and play, and I don't have a job. I mean, I think we have to be responsible. Those discussions are going to have to be made before I could answer your question.
Sure. And can they afford to buy tickets and to go and watch these sporting events? One scenario for the rescheduling would be PGA Championship in August, British Open in September, U.S. Open in October, Masters in November, and then obviously have to squeeze in the FedEx Cup playoffs, the Ryder Cup. I mean, the question, should there even be a Ryder Cup this year? I mean, I think if there's any, you know, big event that maybe gets postponed, as much as I love the Ryder Cup, it's scheduled for September 25th to 27th at Whistling Straits in Cooler, Wisconsin. I don't, you know, I mean, the qualifying process, it would be completely, you know, gone, I think, with the way things are going now. So
do you feel that they could get rid
of the Ryder Cup this year?
Yeah, well, remember September 11, it was pushed back. So I think the nature of the event, the way it is, you know, it started off all the way back in the 1920s, was a way to obviously bridge the Atlantic and to grow the game. And that initiative, even as competitive as the Ryder Cup is right now, that initiative should never change. And it has. It's been great for Europe. It's been great for America, even though they haven't been as successful, because it's created this rivalry. It's introduced America to a lot of the European stars. It's where, you know, they got to meet Rory McIlroy and the Henrik Stensons of the world and the Ian Poulters. So the nature of the event, it's brilliant with its competitiveness. But it needs to be played where people can come out. Now, it's not safe for people to come out. And, you know, I can't imagine a Ryder Cup without fans. So to me, that has to be a fan allowed event. And when it's safe enough and things are good enough, I think that's when you have the Ryder Cup. So to me, it's like the Olympics. Just to squeeze it in, like I said, I think it's unfair. I think it's unfair for the people that love the game as well. They're entitled to see that event up close and personal. They have their tickets. So, you know, I guess I sit on a different side of the fence than that. I think everybody's involved. I think golf's this amazing game that you can, you know, a kid can learn and go around a golf course for the very first time. Golf's the one sport that involves everybody. Whatever your level, you know, you can just bunt it around. So I think we have to be, we have to allow, want to have everybody back again.
That's true. That's true. It's just so hard to tell. There's so much uncertainty.
Yeah.
How about, have you talked to other players? You know, what are they doing during this downtime? Is the break good for somebody like a Tiger Woods who really hasn't played since February, his own event, the Genesis Invitational?
Yeah, where I live, Lake Nona in Orlando, there's quite a few there. So, matter of fact, I mean, you know, some of them, you know, they all have, not all, but a lot of them have young kids. So there was like hide animals around. I mean, I'm talking about stuffed toys in trees. So they're all playing like sort of these stuffed toy hunts so that they can see and take pictures all the way around. I saw Henrik Stenson yesterday from a distance, and he wanted to play pickleball with his family. It's tough because you mentioned someone like Henrik Stenson. You know, Henrik Stenson, Justin Rose, and Brooks Koepka are barely inside the top 200 of the FedEx Cup this year. So they're all struggling. So for them, all three of those guys, for various reasons, this is good that they've stopped now. Chance to get fully healthy, especially Brooks Koepka, former number one player in the world, still number one in my book, really, because of his knee injury. It's a chance for him for that to fully heal. Tiger Woods, too, maybe a chance to reset the clock. You know, he pushed himself so much in 2019, and you could see he wasn't ready to come, you know, play as much golf this year. So it's a chance just to heal. You know, sometimes when you've just competed and competed and competed, you nearly get a little bit of burnout. But meanwhile, on the flip side, you know, if it's a Sungjae Im or, you know, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy has been on a tear. And, you know, the Colin Morikawas and Victor Hovland, the new guys who just got into a rhythm, this is the worst thing for them. Because when you're new to the sport or at the height of your powers, when you shut it down, that's the worst time, because that's when, you know, you make your gravy.
Frank, you're so interesting to listen to. Thanks so much for your insight. We have to take a break, but I so appreciate you coming on Talking Golf.
Hey, my pleasure, man. Stay healthy, stay safe, like everybody as well. It's, you know, we don't ever want to see this again.
I know. Yeah. You too. Stay well, and I hope to see you soon. Frank Nabilo, CBS Sports Golf Analyst. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and talk with Mike Wann, LPGA Commissioner, get his insight on the LPGA Tour and everything going on. We'll be back.
Ann Liguori is talking golf on Sunday morning with you, right here on The Fan.
All righty, well, that will wake you up if you're not up already. Thanks for listening. Ann Liguori with you. We have up until 8 o'clock, and I'm so delighted that the commissioner of the LPGA, Mike Wann, joins us now. Mike, how are you?
Hey, Ann, how you doing this morning?
I'm good. I hope you and your family are well.
Yeah, we're good.
Good, 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 good. I know you were part of a phone meeting yesterday with other sports commissioners, with the president of the United States. How did that go?
Good. It was, you know, I think he's encouraging us. He knows we're all going through some tough times, and we tried to encourage right back. You know, certainly he's got his hands full, to say the least. And I think he just encouraged us to remember that, you know, sport is important to the nation, not to mention the world. And when we can, you know, let's get back out there as soon as we can. I think my guess is the real objective of the call, and it continues to achieve that objective, was to really keep us working together, keep a collaborative spirit, because we're all facing similar challenges. So whatever the Major League Baseball is working on, or I'm working on, or Major League Soccer is working on, there's a lot of synergies and learnings we can have from each other. So by keeping us connected to each other, we all learn, you know, we all learn and we all get ready at similar times. So when we think it's safe to get out there, regardless of your sport, we can kind of learn from each other.
Was the tone pretty positive, or, you know, from the other commissioners, what did it sound like?
You know, I think it's positive, you know, given the circumstances. You know, I mean, I think, you know, I think obviously all of us have the same desire. You know, we want to get there, and at the same time, none of us want to be part of any kind of setback. I mean, you know, obviously the world, not just the U.S., is going through some pretty significant efforts here to control the outbreak of COVID-19. And so as much as we don't want COVID-19 to interrupt schedules any farther than it already has, at the same time, we realize that our sport, you know, is appropriately not the number one thing of importance here. And we'll make sure that when we come back, we don't put our athletes or their families, or more importantly, the global fans in any kind of risk of having a setback. So I think more than anything else, we are all just, you know, we're all just trying to learn from each other and understand, you know, nobody had greater insight into the health expertise than President Trump. So it was, you know, it's a good situation. I think we're all as positive as we can be. We're all frustrated, and we all feel bad for our athletes and our fans that we're letting down, but we all understand that we're in this together.
Right. Now, do you think the LPGA Tour can overcome this global crisis? I read yesterday where you said, what, about 30 to 40% of your players are actually overseas now, so.
I don't know that that's true, to be honest with you. I probably need to follow up with my head of tour operations today, because I got that question, and we were getting ready to play our first, or not our first, but our kind of restarted domestic events in Arizona, and a couple events in California. The first ones we canceled here in America. We had all of our athletes here in America, and had been for a few weeks. We wanted to make sure that everybody was here. We weren't going to get blocked from being here, that they'd all been here for more than 14 days, just in case anybody wasn't feeling well. So we were kind of all ready to go, and we had all kinds of scenarios, including playing without fans and a much reduced staff. And so at that point, we were kind of set. When we then postponed our first three events and talked about the likelihood of postponing our next three, I know personally I had a lot of calls from a lot of players saying, hey, given what's going on here and my likely inability to get back to home, wherever home was for that individual athlete, what do you think, Commissioner? And I told everybody the same thing, which is, if home is where you feel you should be right now, go home. I mean, you know, I can't tell you when we're going to tee it up again. So I don't know. You know, somebody said to me, how many of your athletes are here? I said, I don't know, maybe 70%. But like I said, a month ago, we sort of knew where everybody was. I'm not sure if my team is still kind of tracking that data now, you knowing that we weren't going to tee it up until mid-June.
Right, but because so many of your events, Commissioner, are in the Far East, I know earlier in the year, you kind of started talking about this coronavirus with China and Thailand, Singapore, like months perhaps before other people were, right?
Yeah, it's almost humorous to look back now and think about some of the interviews I did back in the end of January when somebody said, you're really not going to play because of a respiratory issue overseas. And they were calling things like respiratory issue and, you know, Chinese flu. You know, obviously we had done a little bit more work at the time. It just hadn't become as significant here in the States. But, we, at the end of January, we were facing a Thailand, Singapore, and China stretch. We were in Australia at the time. And, you know, we started learning more and more about what was going on in Wuhan, China, and the concerns that some of the other countries were having. They had their first cases in Thailand and Singapore as well. And it kind of happened overnight. I mean, things just kind of sprung. And at the time, you know, we didn't know much about it here in the States, but we were obviously learning about it on the tour and realizing that should we go, and either one of our players or caddies, even a volunteer or a fan that was close to the tour while we were playing, the plan would have been to quarantine our tour. At the time, they were saying between 14 and 21 days, so they would have, you know, locked us in our hotel for 14 to 21 days. And I, you know, obviously went through the mental math of, you know, if we're stuck in, you know, fill in the blank, if we're stuck in Pattaya, Thailand, and we're locked into our hotel for 21 days, that's not only going to become a problem for our tour and our athletes and our caddies, but obviously becomes international news and, you know, something that we thought at the time, let's avoid that until we see what happens with this thing. And we thought it would probably be primarily a Far East issue at the time, but obviously we weren't right on that. So when it came back to actually having to make some choices here in the States, a couple of months later, you know, maybe a full month later, we knew a lot more about COVID, and it made it easier, quite frankly, to make these decisions. In the beginning, we probably made these decisions based on everything we didn't know, and at the end, we've been making the decisions based on everything we do know.
Sure, and you have certainly been on the forefront and have been very decisive. And I know the LPGA Tour announced on Friday that the next five events on the calendar have been postponed, with four of the five tournaments rescheduled for later this year. One of those five tournaments takes place in Atlantic City, New Jersey, the ShopRite LPGA Classic. A lot of people in the New York area just love that event. And so that was originally scheduled, what, end of May, and that will be moved to July 31st to August 2nd. So I know a lot goes into rescheduling these tournaments. Commissioner, could you give us some insight on what happens behind the scenes? Are you talking, like, how tough is it? It's like a jigsaw puzzle, right? And yet there's so much uncertainty that even if you do reschedule, you don't know if that's even going to happen.
Yeah, it's an uncertain time for everybody, and I feel every time I answer my phone, I know the conversation I'm going to have. I just don't know who I'm going to have it with until I answer it. But this conversation typically starts with, we're uncomfortable, you know, we're sitting in a date. And people can say that whether they're sitting in a June date or an October date. You know, there's no way to turn on cable news for three minutes and not say, geez, I'm not really sure about the situation. And then none of our sponsors want to be part of any kind of safety challenges or setbacks. And, you know, most of our events are celebrations of the title sponsor, celebration of the community we're in. You know, it's all about giving back in those communities. So they don't want it to be about something other than that. So, you know, it starts with, hey, do you have a date for me, Mike, that's much later? Well, you know, more than half of my events can't really play after September 15th, just given where they're located. And ShopRite's a good example, too. So when they call and say, hey, do you have a later date? I mean, the process begins of, you know, you guys know my schedule. I know my schedule. It's published. You can sort of see when we started the year, we think we had three or four open dates in the second half of the year. You know, those have long been filled. So we just start moving around. The good news, when ShopRite's case, they called and I said, listen, being on the IGF or the Olympic Golf Board, I do know that the Olympics is, you know, kind of on the fence and still thinking this through, but I don't think there's any downside. So we moved them to the week of the men's Olympics, where, you know, at the time, nobody probably would have played then. But I think given the concerns about the Olympics at the time, even though nothing had been announced, we thought that's a good place to sit. It buys a couple of months for ShopRite and gives us an opportunity to play the event the way we want. So I would say, you know, probably most of our events we've now rescheduled in a different time, but we've definitely asked a few events to simply sit and play in 2021. It reminds you just how, you know, what a great partnership crew we have, because, I mean, we're asking people to make tough decisions, and they're all facing, and in the most case, everybody's facing business challenges they've never faced before in their life, because, I mean, no one's ever dealt with something like this. So I have to be respectful of the fact where golf fits in their priorities. And at the same time, obviously, it's one of my top priorities. So, you know, it's a pretty healthy learning lesson in patience. And, you know me, and patience doesn't come natural. So it's been a process to work through, you know, making sure people can be happy and at the same time give us and our athletes an opportunity to play when it is safe to play.
I know the USGA announced on Friday that the U.S. Women's Open, which was previously scheduled for the first week of June, will move to December 7th through the 13th. And what they're doing, it's going to be at Champions Golf Club in Houston. Obviously, they have to deal with the loss of daylight, so they're going to, you know, use two golf courses to get the play in. So there are solutions, correct, Commissioner? I mean, people are trying.
Yeah, I mean, the USGA is a great example of kind of what's going on now. You know, they called us and said, what are your fall dates? You know, I had a couple options. You know, one of them was, you know, with a bunch of caveats and asterisks. And, you know, Mike Davis called me about a week later after they had done some of their own crisis communication meetings. And he said, how would you feel about December? And I said, December for what? You know, how do you feel about December for the U.S. Women's Open? And, of course, my initial reaction is, wait a minute, that doesn't work. And then I said, you know what, Mike, this is not the time for that doesn't work. I mean, I'm living in the same process. So I said, tell me more. And he said, you know, Champions is in Houston. We think the golf course can be a quality golf course at that time. It kind of gets out of the way of all your other scheduling conflicts. And I said, you know, the problem for me, Mike, is I really don't want, you know, the U.S. Open to be a limited field event. And I'm pretty sure you don't either with all the open qualifiers. And he already had an answer for that. He said, you know, we've got two courses. We're going to get them both tournament ready. And, you know, for the U.S. Open, you know, their date with us was first week in June. They had two concerns. I mean, one, obviously not sure at the 1st of June where the world was going to be on COVID, but I think much more importantly for the USGA, they couldn't do any of their qualifiers. I mean, there's so many qualifiers that lead up to the U.S. Open. So many times that women have an opportunity to play to get their way in. And in virtually no state right now can you really hold a U.S. Open qualifier. So they were realizing that if they couldn't move their date, they couldn't really create their field. So their challenge for 1st of June became probably more timely than almost any other tournament, because you can wait to build and you can wait to get a golf course ready. You can't really wait in the qualifying process. So Mike kind of figured by going as far as December, he really buys himself some quality time to do the qualifiers the way they want to do them.
Commissioner, I thank you so much for your leadership and the way you treat your players and everyone. Stay well. Thanks so much for coming on. I so appreciate it.
Thanks for keeping golf on the forefront, and we appreciate it.
Have a great day and stay well. Well, we're out of time. Unfortunately, I want to thank you for tuning in this morning. I thank Frank Nabilo, CBS Sports Golf Analyst, LPGA Commissioner Mike Wan. I thank Pete Hoffman. Great job in the studio. Rick Wolf's Sports Edge is next. And Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori was brought to you by Travelers Insurance. For auto, home, and business, Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Stay safe. Stay in. Play a little golf if you can. Practice social distancing. Know that you're loved, you're needed, you're stronger than you think. You're going to get through this. Don't ever give up. And I'm going to talk to you next Sunday morning.
Sports Radio 66, The Fan, WFAN.